Big thanks to Keith Teklitz for editing this episode.
Christmas. This must be strewn along the path here on the Journey Into podcast. I'm going to try to do these more regularly. Yes, I am driving in my car once again, so there will be some noise in the background. Rish sounds pretty good when he does his Rish Outcast in the car. I can barely hear that he's in the car. I don't know how much sound cancellation he's doing, noise reduction, but he has a lapel mic where I just have my Zoom here that I not hold, but have close to my mouth while I'm driving. Anyway, if you don't like the road noise, I guess wait for a regular episode or a Delusions of Grandeur. I'm here to finish out, well, for now, the Marvel Netflix shows. I've talked about Daredevil, I've talked about Jessica Jones, so now I guess it's time to talk about Luke Cage. And I think that Iron Fist will be out this month. And then later on, I guess it'll be The Defenders. So I should probably catch up with things before we get to those. There's other TV shows I can talk about that I've watched in the past or currently. But I wanted to get through all of these superhero ones first, and it's taken me longer to do so. But anyway, let's get into it. Luke Cage, we already know Luke Cage. If you watch Jessica Jones, this series, then you're already familiar with Luke Cage. He was probably in, she had 13 episodes, and he was probably in 5 or 6 of those episodes. Not always highly featured, but present. So just to recap with where Luke Cage was back in with Jessica Jones. So he was in Hell's Kitchen. It's a city in New York. Of course, that's where Daredevil has always worked from. And he owned a bar, and Jessica Jones had a fascination with him. It was always watching him, came in to help protect him when his bar was, or when he was getting attacked in his bar, but then realized that she didn't need to because he's Luke Cage. He has unbreakable skin and he's got super strength. And they kind of find that kinship in both being the Marvel TV term is enhanced. People with superpowers, and they kind of compare notes and they hook up, get into a relationship. But then we learn Luke Cage was married, his wife is dead, and eventually we find out that Jessica Jones is the one that killed his wife when she was under the control of the Purple Man. And that causes problems, and Luke Cage goes away, but then he comes back, and we find out that he's actually under the control of the Purple Man. And he ends up fighting Jessica Jones, his bar gets destroyed, all these things happen in Jessica Jones, and then he just goes away. Well, turns out that he left Hell's Kitchen and he went to Harlem. He's not from Harlem. He didn't grow up there, but Reva, his wife, did. She kind of introduced him to several people in Harlem. And so he's now, at the beginning of this series, he's working for Pops, who owns a barbershop in Harlem. He's an ex-gang member, and he's kind of a safe haven for all the youth. He tries to make sure that the kids have something to do so they don't end up in gangs and killing people and things like that. He tries to be a good influence on the community. And Luke Cage is basically the cleaner. He cleans up for the barbershop. And he also takes odd jobs elsewhere because he's also a dishwasher at Harlem's Paradise, which is owned by Cornell Stokes, or otherwise goes by Cottonmouth. He doesn't really like to be called Cottonmouth. He's trying to be a businessman and kind of go straight somewhat. Anyway, so that's kind of where we find Luke Cage at the beginning of this series. And you kind of pick things up as you go along. He's trying to stay under the radar. He's trying not to get involved in anything. Just trying to keep his head down and earn a living. Pops knows that Luke Cage has superpowers. He knows that he used to be in prison, that he's an ex-con, actually an escaped con. And we'll learn more about that as we go along. So he knows the story. He was, this is the neighborhood that Luke Cage's wife, Reva, grew up in. So he knew Reva, and he's willing to help out Luke. And just a general good guy, trying to do the right thing. So before we get too far into the story and all that, and I'm not sure how detailed I'm going to be, let me just tell you right out, I loved the Luke Cage series. I think, you know, even though I enjoyed Daredevil quite a bit, and I thought Jessica Jones was groundbreaking and compelling in its story, I really, really got into Luke Cage. I really enjoyed it a lot. I liked not only Luke Cage, but all the surrounding characters. We have Misty Knight in here. I already talked about Cottonmouth. And I guess let me go through the cast here a little bit so that I don't forget in the end. Luke Cage, of course, is played by Mike Coulter. And I think he does a great job. I've seen some interviews with him. He's just kind of a cool guy. And down to earth, you know, he's not caught up in thinking he's all that kind of thing. But just a really down-to-earth kind of guy, and plays Luke Cage really well as kind of the unreluctant hero trying to keep his head down. Then we have Mahershala Ali as Cottonmouth or Cornell Stokes. Wow, I had never seen him in anything. I know he's up for an Oscar, I think, for a movie that he did. I can't think of the name of it right now off the top of my head. I didn't see the movie, but he's up for an Oscar right now. I thought that he was one of the most compelling characters in this entire series, even more so than Luke Cage to some degree. I liked Luke, but Cottonmouth I thought was really cool. I liked how they developed him. I just liked him as a character, and we can get into that more. Then we have Simone Missick as Misty Knight. And, of course, if you follow Marvel Comics, you know that, you know, Misty Knight is part of the comic book of Luke Cage, Hero for Hire, Iron Fist, here, you know, all those in that pack. And she was, you know, part of that 70s Marvel comic book fame, I guess. And, of course, she's developed through the comics in the years. Again, these aren't people that I really followed in the comics. I mean, I knew who Luke Cage was or Power Man. I'd heard Misty Knight. I've seen Iron Fist. And I've seen these characters, but I really didn't read them. They would show up in other things, and at one point, Luke Cage was a member of the Fantastic Four for a few issues to replace Ben Grimm, who had been transformed back to just his human form instead of being the Thing. And so Power Man, or Luke Cage, became a member of the Fantastic Four for a little bit. That was kind of fun. I remember reading that. And a lot of people called it, you know, the 70s Luke Cage, kind of a blaxploitation kind of thing. And, you know, to a certain degree, they're right. I mean, you know, the way he talks in the comic books is all jive and that kind of thing. I think one of the most famous issues of the Luke Cage comic that gets a lot of attention from people, just because its whole premise is pretty funny, but Luke Cage goes after Dr. Doom because he did a job for him somehow. And of course, Luke Cage was the hero for hire. He was out to make money, using his superpowers as a way to make money. And so he was the original hero for hire. And anyway, Dr. Doom owed him $200 for a job that he did for him, kind of indirectly, but for the Latverian embassy or whatever. And so he wanted his $200. It just kind of reminded me of, you know, Better Off Dead, where, you know, I want my $2 kind of thing. But anyway, so he ends up going to the Fantastic Four, getting a pogo plane or something, and going to Latveria and fighting with Dr. Doom just to get his $200. And he does. He gets it. It's pretty funny. But anyway, so yeah, he's kind of a jive-talking, you know, open shirt, you know, kind of a, hopefully you've seen the costume for Luke Cage, you know, in his 70s style. You know, he's got the afro, he's got like a tiara thing, and he's got braces around his forearms. And he's got this open yellow shirt. And is it jeans or just a... I don't know. I'd have to look at it again. I think he's got chains around his belt and stuff, too. Kind of a cool-looking, iconic, you know, image. But, yeah, there is a little bit of blaxploitation there. But all in all, you know, kind of a groundbreaking character. Other than Black Panther, you know, he's the only prominent African-American character in Marvel Comics at the time. And I don't know DC Comics enough to know, you know, when the black characters that they had. I got off track there. I was talking about Misty Knight. I just know her name mostly. I haven't read much of Misty Knight and all that stuff from the 70s. But I thought that Simone Missick played that really well. She was a she's a detective, and you know, coming at all these things from that angle, and so you get to see inside, you know, her investigation and all the things that she has to deal with at the police station, and her partner ends up being corrupt on the payroll of Cottonmouth and all that. So there's a lot of really good stuff there, and she does a great job. The acting in this is incredible. Theo Rossi is the actor that plays Herman Alvarez, or Shades, because he wears shades. And I guess that's one thing that they really improved on the quality of the foes or the adversaries of Luke Cage. It's pretty cheesy, you know, if you go back to those 70s comics for Luke Cage. You know, the Shades and Cottonmouth and Black Mamba and all those things, they come from Luke Cage, but man, they improved those characters quite a bit and brought them out of the comic book and I guess transformed them into a realistic modern day take on who these characters would be in 2016. Of course, we have the recurring Rosario Dawson as Claire Temple, and she has a definite more prominent role in this than she had in Daredevil or Jessica Jones. She is the night nurse, and she comes to Harlem because her mother lives there. And then, talk about actors, Alfre Woodard as Mariah Dillard. Her character in the comic books was called Black Mariah or something like that. And yeah, she was like this overweight lady that stereotypical representation in the comics, you know. I guess before I get into the story again, I guess this, I might have to break this episode up because I have more to say about this probably than the other ones, I guess. I do want to talk a little bit about the production of this show. So the showrunner for this is a gentleman by the name of Chio Hadari Coker. I believe that's how you pronounce his name. He really pitched this to Netflix as an examination of Harlem. But, you know, I've watched some interviews and you know, heard from the cast and from Chio himself. And, you know, his goal was really to show the African-American community as much as he could authentically represent that and represent Harlem just the way things are. And from my point of view, I mean, come on, I'm as white bread as you can get. You know, I'm raised in Montana, not a lot of exposure to anybody from very many ethnic groups of any kind, and I've always kind of lived in the Northwest, and so, you know, I don't have a reference point for what it's like to live in Harlem or any of these things. But to me, and just from the outside in, it seemed very authentic. It seemed these characters were real people; they weren't just caricatures, and you know, they really had a love for the community and wanted to, you know, even the bad guys, Cottonmouth and Mariah Dillard. I mean, even though they were doing bad things or whatever, I mean, they wanted the community to do well, and they had a love for Harlem, you know, even though they went about things differently. And so I really liked that. And the music in this, you know, was a lot of hip-hop or rap or, you know, just again, authentically from the African-American experience. And it was great music. It was good stuff. I mean, I have a playlist that I listen to the soundtrack from Luke Cage. Well, definitely more so than Daredevil or Jessica Jones. And to me, I mean, there was just more heart in this. I was more invested in these characters and this whole world of Luke Cage. I just thought it was great. I really got into these characters. I really cared for all of them. I think it's the best Marvel TV show to come out. Not to say there's not flaws, but I guess we'll get into that as we get more into the story. So the story starts out, like I said, with Luke Cage working in Pops' barbershop, trying to keep his head down, not to make any waves or anything, but just to have a job and get by and lay low for a while after everything that happened with Jessica Jones and his wife and everything. And he's also, like I said, working as a dishwasher over at Harlem's Paradise, which is owned by Cornell Stokes, otherwise known as Cottonmouth. Anyway, one night he ends up tending bar because the typical bartender's out. Stokes, or Cottonmouth, borrowed money illegally or whatever from his cousin, Mariah Dillard, who's kind of a politician, a city politician. And she's not all on the up and up. So she stole some money or shifted some money from somewhere to give him enough money to start his business. And it's a nightclub with live music and all that kind of thing. So he's always had his hand in crime in the area. And so he's got this arms deal going down where he's going to make money by getting guns. And then he's going to pay her back. And she'll be able to continue. So anyway, so that's going down. There's a young kid, I can't remember his name. I think it's Chico. And anyway, he was at the barbershop. And like I said, Pops tries to keep the youth there, has video games for him and stuff like that, and talks to him and tries to teach him the good things in life rather than being a gangster or whatever. And so Chico is what I'm going to call him. He's out with the bartender at this arms deal for Stokes. And things go bad. Everybody gets shot because they tried to change the deal on the arms dealers or whatever, take the guns and the money and kill everybody else kind of thing. And things went bad and everybody got killed except for Chico. And so he ends up running away from that and disappears. And of course, he has the money, or at least half of the money or something like that. And I'm going into way too much detail, but I want to set this up right because this is important to Luke's story. So anyway, he goes on the run. Word gets back to Cottonmouth that things are bad, that the deal went wrong, and there's still money out there. And so this is how Misty Knight is brought into the story, where she comes with her partner to figure out what happened with these dead bodies and, you know, put things together and figure out who's responsible and all these things. And so she comes in, she's investigating that. Meanwhile, Stokes, I just want to call him Stokes because he didn't like being called Cottonmouth. Cottonmouth, with the help of Shades, is trying to, you know, find Chico and find out what's going on. Shades, I guess to tell you, he works for a guy called Diamondback. You see a theme there? Diamondback, Cottonmouth. But he doesn't bring up much. He just says, I work for Diamondback, and Diamondback is backing Stokes and all of his stuff going on. So anyway, he's there to help out, so to speak. And so all these people are introduced. So then towards the end of the episode, Stokes' men are kind of shaking down Luke Cage's landlords for money, even though they you know, they don't really owe this money. So anyway, Luke Cage ends up fighting them off, and they want to pay him for it. And so you get to see kind of Luke Cage in action, but yet he's still trying to keep it low. They try to pay him for it, and he says, no, just this is what I wanted to do. And so that's the beginning of the episode. That kind of sets everything up. It puts everybody in place and starts setting things up. And things go off from there. So Pop hears about things. He wants to find Chico. He asks Cage to help him out. He says, hey, you owe me for keeping your secret and all these things. And so he convinces Cage to get involved and go find Chico and see if he can bring him back to him so that he'll be safe kind of thing. And so he does that and convinces him to come back to the barbershop and then invites Cottonmouth to come and talk to Chico and work things out. Because this barbershop, again, it's kind of like I said, it's kind of a neutral territory. Nobody's going to do anything bad in the barbershop. And Stokes, you know, he has his own version of honor and whatever. So he respects that, and he respects Pops. But anyway, there's another guy, I guess he was from Daredevil, but I don't remember him that much. But anyway, he was hanging out at the barbershop, and he caught wind that Chico was going to be there. And so he let one of Cottonmouth's right-hand guys or whatever know about it. And so he decided on his own that he was going to go take care of the situation. And so he goes and he shoots up the barbershop, tries to kill Chico, ends up killing Pop instead.
course, nobody likes that, right? So Cottonmouth finds out about this, and he's also devastated that Pops got killed. He's more than just a one-dimensional bad guy where he's just evil and wants to do crime and be mean to people and bad. I mean, he does bad things, and he can be mean to people, and he doesn't seem to have a problem killing people. So he's not a good person, but I mean, he's part of this community. He's part of Harlem. He grew up there. You know, a lot of things happened when he was a kid that we'll get into later. But, you know, this affects him, too. Even though he has to put on a front and be the big crime guy and run this. It really, all he wants to do is run his nightclub. That's really where his passion is. He loves the music. He's a musician himself. And just, you know, had a lot, almost a prodigy. Anyway, he's really into music. And, you know, there's a big musical backbone to this whole series as well. And that, again, comes from Coker. He wanted the episode names for every episode, all the 13 episodes, are songs by Gangstar. And so, you know, the names of the episodes are like Moment of Truth, Code of the Streets, Who's Gonna Take the Weight, Just Got a Rep, Suckas Need Bodyguards, you know, things like that. So these are all song titles from Gangstar. I don't know, to me, that and then all the songs, that there's a lot of songs that are played in the nightclub that you listen to. I mean, just some of it's just really, really good vocals, and just, you know, it's got a feeling to it. It's got a vibe. It's got a beat, this whole thing. And it just seems really authentic to me, as, again, not a guy from Harlem. But it just seemed to, but from everything I've read, I mean, the African American community felt that this was right. This was legit. This was, you know, authentic, the way you would be if you were in Harlem. I mean, it's not going to be super real life because this is a superhero story to begin with. But anyway, I just really caught that vibe of the music and the feeling that it was going to. And I really got into Cottonmouth. The more I learned about him, the more I liked him. He's just a really human character. And I really liked him. And we'll get into why that's so important later on. But anyway, that kind of starts things off. This launches Luke Cage into, he's not just going to lay low anymore. You know, this guy that he could have protected died, and he decides that he's going to get involved. The money from this gun thing does end up going to Dillard, and she puts it in this community center, the Crispus Attucks complex. If you're not familiar with who Crispus Attucks is, you know, I did look it up at the time, and I've looked it up again here so I can talk about it. Crispus Attucks was the first person that was killed in the Boston Massacre back just before the Revolutionary War. He was of African and Native American descent and was probably a slave at the time. There's not a lot known about him, but he was the first person killed in the Boston Massacre. He kind of became this figure that was looked up to during the anti-slavery movement, you know, in the 1800s. He was the first martyr of the American Revolution. And so he was held up as an example of what a black man could be. Again, there's not a lot known about him. There's speculation that he was the son of a prince, an African prince, and things like that. But anyway, he's a symbol, right? He's a symbol of civil rights. He's a symbol of anti-slavery back at the time. So that's where that comes from. I've learned things from watching Luke Cage. It was kind of interesting to learn, and I enjoyed that part of it. But anyway, Dillard has the money. You know, there's a lot of exchange back and forth between Cottonmouth and Mariah Dillard. Luke Cage gets involved. He finds out that Pop's Barbershop actually needs money or it's not going to survive. He becomes friends with a guy named Bobby Fish, who was a regular customer and a friend of Pop's. And so he decides he's going to do something good. He's going to go against Stokes and get this money back so he can help pay for the barbershop. So he does that. I mean, it's pretty incredible, this scene, you know, where he just... So what he did is he went around and he started raiding all of Cottonmouth's operations and stealing just a little bit of money, showing that his safety spots were exposed or vulnerable. And so Stokes ends up moving all of his money into this Crispus Attucks complex with the gun money. And so everything's held there. And then he just goes, walks in, takes on all these guys that are protecting all this money and everything. He's got unbreakable skin, right? So they're just shooting at him and can't put him down with a bullet. They just bounce off of him. We've seen that since Superman and The Thing and, you know, all these superheroes. But the way this show runs, he's not a superhero at this point. Luke Cage is just a guy with superpowers. He's in Harlem. He's trying to do the right thing. It's done really well in that way. And that this, even though he's got superpowers, it doesn't feel like he's Superman or he's this incredible thing. He's using the powers that he has. He's using his abilities to shut this thing down. And so anyway, he walks in wearing a hoodie and these guys are shooting him, coming at him. He's beating him up. The guns aren't affecting him at all. And he just walks in, takes the money and goes out. So all these people are trying to kill him. And he just goes in there and takes care of business. Just really cool. I mean, I just really got excited by Luke Cage because here he didn't want to do anything. He was trying to lay low, but here he is. He's going to get money to pay off the barbershop. And he's going to take down or at least hurt business for Cottonmouth in the process. Of course, nobody knows, you know, who this guy is. Up until this point, we don't really know who Luke Cage is either. But we're definitely going to learn that along the way. In the meantime, we find out that Misty Knight's partner, Scafo or something like that. Anyway, he's a corrupt cop and he ends up killing Chico. And even though he was supposed to be there protecting him, he ends up killing Chico. After Cottonmouth finds out Luke Cage did all this stuff, he's like, I'm going to go get him. You know, he tracks Luke down back to where he lives, where his apartment is. And Luke Cage is there talking to his landlord. And Cottonmouth shows up on a rooftop with a bazooka or rocket launcher, whatever, and shoots it at the building. And just boom, the whole thing explodes. And so, you know, it was only the fifth episode or so. You think, okay, well, Luke's going to survive. But that's a lot to take. You know, how unbreakable is his skin? What can he survive? That kind of thing. So then there's a whole episode where he's at the bottom of this pile of rubble, and he was able to save the life of his landlord, the lady that he was with when Cottonmouth shot the rocket launcher at the building. But he's under all this rubble. He's trying to figure out a way to get out. And this whole episode, it goes back into Luke Cage's backstory. Who was he? What did he do? How did he get to this point? And, you know, even before we got to know him in Jessica Jones, how he got before he even had his abilities. So Luke Cage is actually Carl Lucas. That was his name. He was a police officer. He ends up getting framed for something, ends up at at the Seagate prison. And it's all about him as a prisoner. And he's got the full afro thing going on. And he's just this huge guy with a beard and afro. Totally different look than the bald Luke Cage, you know, suave looking Luke Cage. It's just cool. So anyway, there's this fight club or this fight thing where the you know, crooked guards coerce people, whatever, into going to these fights. And they get certain privileges if they fight and if they win and all these kinds of things. And so they threaten his friends and all these things to get him involved in this fight, illegal ring fights going on at the prison. He goes to this, group session with a psychologist there that ends up actually being Reva Connors, who is his wife. Well, will later become his wife. He's attracted to her, really ends up trusting her a lot and talking to her about these things. He has a friend, another inmate that he protects and is a friend to. It's also a reason that he ends up getting into the fights. From this new hope, he'd kind of lost hope in everything, but by talking to Connors and getting things going, he finds this new hope and he's going to do something good. And so he's planning to expose these activities, these illegal fight rings, and they find out about it and he gets beaten up really, really bad, almost to death. And then Connors, who works with a doctor there at the prison, Dr. Bernstein, goes to him in a panic, convinces him to save Luke's life. He's a scientist that does these experimental procedures on prisoners. So he's kind of this, you know, evil scientist, mad scientist kind of guy. And he's doing all these experiments on prisoners. So anyway, he ends up putting Luke Cage underwater in this, I don't know, a bath, I guess, like a capsule with water in it. He's encapsulated and has these electrodes in there to try to save his life. The bad prison guard comes in, sabotages stuff. There's a huge accident. Things go bad while Luke's in this chamber trying to be restored. And there's explosions and all these things going on. And then Carl Lucas, who becomes Luke Cage, ends up, you know, breaking out of the experiment. And it's pretty cool because as part of going into this chamber and part of this experiment, he's wearing the headband. The tiara thing, the metal tiara thing that he wore back in the comic books in the 70s. He's wearing these braces around his wrist. And so, you know, and he's got this full head of hair, you know. And so he looks similar to what he looked like back in the comic book days. And so I thought that was a cool little nod to the comic books, a way to get away with throwing that look in there, similar to what they did with Jessica Jones with the weird costume, paying homage to the source material for Luke Cage, but doing it in a way that made sense. But it was kind of a cool wink wink moment. They even go so far, so he's able to escape with Connors, Reva. He gets her out of there, but as he's going, you know, he's not wearing a shirt and he wants to fit in, and so he goes to this clothesline looking for clothes, and the only thing in there is this really loud yellow shirt that doesn't have any buttons in the front of it. And so he puts that on, just more homage to that original costume of Luke Cage. And he escapes with Reva out, and they go find a motel or whatever to hide in. So anyway, I think that's a good place to stop. I think I'm going to make these shorter episodes. I'll stop there talking about Luke Cage. I'll finish it up next time. I'll probably close this with some little excerpts of the music from Luke Cage. We will drop this for now, but later on we'll pick it up as it's strewn along the path and talk more about Luke Cage. So until then, be safe out there and journey on. With the barrel on your lips, saying nifty out the drill before he pound you with the grip, Lord. Who to call when no one obeys the law? And there ain't no Iron Man that can come and save us all. Power to the people and Luke Cage the cause. And the cops got it wrong, we don't think Cage at all. Look, dawg, a hero never had one. Already took Malcolm and Martin, this is the last one. I beg your pardon, somebody pulling a fast one. Now we got a hero for hire and he a black one. And bullet hole hoodies is the fashion. We in Hall of Paradise, delicate done. That I'm about to trade the mic for a magnum. Give up my life for Trayvon to have one. Cheer, cause this is bulletproof love. And you already know what a bulletproof does. So you can take it from a bulletproof dog. The hood got his back, dog, bulletproof love. Blood thicker than mud, and who am I to judge if you get a gun in the club?
I mean, that real thing. I mean, make you not want to sleep, you can't think, you just lose yourself, wrapped all up in it, huh? Shit, that thing will have you mesmerized. Let me sing it for you. You don't know what you do to me. Let me tell you how you make me feel. Need your loving, it's so good to me. I can't even sleep.
No,
boy, you got me weak.
Yeah,
my heart is on fire since you put that thing on me. Oh,
you put that thing on me, that thing, baby. Ooh, baby, 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 mesmerized.
I said one, two, three, four, hit it. You got me mesmerized. I don't know what to do. Baby got me hypnotized. I think I'm in love with you. You got me so close.
try to be a righteous man. Talk to the Lord most every day. Sometimes this world can do me wrong. I keep to the path, won't go astray. When I stop falling over, my feelings catch a flame. I'd be a man, say a man, but you won't be the same. If you ain't gonna do me right, I might just do you in. Ain't it a sin?
Nobody smarter. That's why I got admitted, but I still rejected Harvard. I'm the Fresh Prince in a school where they couldn't read. Mama put me in a school with the Kennedys. When I met Bill Clinton, I was 17. But dead presidentials on my niggas' knee. Dining with the governor's daughter. And the father say, I remind him of Obama. I'm the chief diplomat every day. And I'm black and white, Janelle Monae. They won't be the game, but long little chief, for a little old thing, little boys bang bang. Long little chief, niggas fighting over rings, niggas won't be the cane, but long little chief, now watch pretty mama while I slam my cane. Long little chief.